So, hello, welcome to Drinking with Comics, The Conversations. This is a new podcast, a spinoff of the regular Drinking with Comics that Chris and I decided to do while we are all sheltered in place during this, you know, COVID-19 crisis. And it's an interesting time because while we have a lot of extra time to read, we also had the announcement last week that Diamond is postponing or putting on hiatus all comic book distribution for the next 2 months, and it may go beyond that. There'll probably be a reassessment period. I don't know, Chris, what did you think when you heard that news last week?
I mean, it was definitely very interesting. I mean, because personally, I can't think of a time when anything like this has really happened before.
Right.
I mean, granted, there really hasn't been a kind of, you know, national or even, you know, global crisis like this in recent history, where, you know, essentially all of these, you know, brick and mortar local comic book stores literally by law cannot be open.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, Diamond, that's Diamond's bread and butter right there. You know, that's who is, you know, that's where all their money's coming from. So with all these stores being closed, you know, they don't have any kind of cash flow coming in.
Yeah. So why keep distributing?
Now, there's no one to distribute to.
Yeah. Do you know, does this affect digital as well? I believe it does, because we were just talking before and I mentioned, like, I get an email from Comixology every week about what comes out, and this week it was just the Comixology digital comics. So I'm like, I'm assuming nobody else is going forward, but I don't know. Have you heard about Marvel or DC or Image?
Well, it is looking like Marvel and DC, that they will actually be delaying all the new digital comic books, you know, during the brick and mortar comic store closures, which, you know, that is, I don't want to say that's a good thing. It's never a good thing that there's no new you know, comics coming out, but it is definitely a good thing to, you know, for the comic shops in general. You know, it basically means that once the stores are able to open up again, you know, then everyone will be able to get their books, and they won't be, you know, burned out from having already read them digitally or anything like that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've taken to reading quite a few digital comics. I've really gotten used to the medium. I got a Kindle Fire a couple months ago, and because of space issues, I've just been like, you know what, I'm just gonna get it digitally. And also, I mean, this isn't totally altruistic, but it also, you know, I will always buy comics. I will always support comics, but a lot of the big two stuff I won't support anymore, just because I'd rather my money goes to Image or to Action Lab or to Vault or whoever, and Black Mask. And that the big two stuff digitally, they offer that stuff on sale really cheap a lot. So it's a good way to kind of, you know, Cosmic Ghost Rider, people were telling me a year and a half ago, I had to read it. And I'm like, I'm so iffy on big two stuff, and I don't want to read it in a monthly installment because of all the ads or whatever. So, I mean, I picked the first trade up for 99 cents and read it. It was fine. If I had read it monthly, I probably would have sold the issues back and taken a loss, because it wasn't great. So I'm starting to see with myself where digital really works for me for some things. But like you said, it kind of scared me at first to think like, man, if they keep Marvel and DC keep doing digital, they're going to, like, because the must read books, people might read them digitally and then not go back. You know, like you said, when this is over and we come out of it and the comic shops open back up, like, it would be nice if Diamond and the comic shops come back out of that gate together.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. You know, otherwise, you know, I can't even imagine what the the landscape would look like otherwise. You know, if they would just, you know, print half of what they would normally print, because they know that, you know, the majority of people have already read it digitally, you know, that would create, you know, an artificial scarcity for a lot of these books.
Yeah.
You know, which might be a good thing for collectors, I guess, or it might be a, you know, it might infuriate a lot of collectors. Now, so, yeah, so, I mean, no, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, that's really interesting because, you know, one of the things about comics and collecting it, comics are very rarely ever worth money anymore because so many are printed and anything that could possibly be collectible is kind of sussed out beforehand and given special treatment, right? That's been since the late 80s, right? Like, I mean, think of all the, you know, X-Force number ones out there that are bagged with a trading card that, you know, nobody gives a shit. Like at the time, it was like, this is going to be amazing. And like now it's like, you know, so ubiquitous, but this could potentially affect print runs, which could then potentially affect collectability again.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, yeah, again, you know, if they're only printing half of what they normally do, you know, at least as far as like, you know, first print stuff goes, you know, if it turns out that, you know, after the fact that there is a big, you know, or at least the same amount of people who are looking for, you know, for the physical copies as there used to be. Yeah, it's just, it's going to be, you know, really there's, I can keep speculating, you know, as far as
yeah,
you know, what I think is going to happen, but
we don't know.
We're just in such like an unprecedented time here that, you know, it's really only time will tell.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things we were talking about before also, you know, so, some of the, I've been impressed with smaller businesses because this is scary for smaller businesses and it's scary for larger businesses, corporate businesses. Theaters are closed. You know, the theater thing is interesting to me because it's like, is it possible that the AMCs and the Regals and the whatever might not survive this, but then the niche, you know, Arclights, American Cinematheque, whatever, like might survive because it's a smaller market. It's a more of a niche specialization thing. I don't know. But we're seeing innovations with little businesses, and I think they might end up faring better in some cases than corporate businesses because they don't have to pull all these strings and go through all this red tape to innovate. And three of the things I wanted to mention that are kind of near and dear to us on the show, King Harbor Brewing, we, you know, your buddy is he, wait, is he owner or is he one of the managers?
Owner.
Owner. Yeah, that's right. So they're doing a cool thing where you can go on their website, order and pay online $25 for a growler of whatever beer. And then if you order by 4 p.m., it gets delivered that day between 4 and 6. I thought that was brilliant. I did that last week. It was so cool. And then comic shop wise, the Comic Bug, they are doing they were doing deliveries. I don't know if they still are. They were doing mail order where you could call and pay, you know, with PayPal or credit card on the phone or on the internet, and then they will mail it to you, and or you can set up an appointment and go in. So I think both you and I have done that, where you kind of call and you go in and you're, you know, pretty much you just go in, get your stuff and leave, but it keeps them from having to be open per se. And then our co-host Mike Wellman, his new shop in Long Beach Atomic Basement, he's doing a thing where he can't be open, but you can call or contact him on social media and he will charge you, same thing, PayPal or credit card, and put your books in a bag. And then the store next to his is Hops and Vine, which is like a craft beer mini mart kind of thing. And they're essential, so they're open. So Atomic Basement Comics has a mailbox in there. So you pay for your stuff over the phone, they'll put it in the mailbox. You can go into Hops and Vine and pick it up. I thought all that, all of that stuff is just really class act innovation on these little businesses' parts.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, that, you know, that is the thing. You know, a lot of these shops, they are having to get creative. you know, not to say that they weren't creative before, but, you know, kind of, you know, just really any port in the storm kind of thing.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a different kind of creative, because like comic shops and breweries, I think, are creative in general. That's the whole kind of backbone, is creation.
Mm-hmm.
And providing it. But also, like, now it's they were still tied into a traditional business model, you know, of which we kind of, especially here in the States, you know, there, I mean, and also just in most Western civilization, if not beyond, like, there's a business model for a brick and mortar store, and it doesn't really mm-hmm. change that much. I mean, there's, you know, a little bit of play, but for the most part, it's the same thing. We're open from this time to this time. We sell you this. You pay with however, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're moving beyond that now, possibly.
It really makes me sad, because I have been reading a lot lately about that since all of this, you know, COVID-19 stuff has been happening, that there are, you know, fortunately, you know, the shops that we frequent haven't been affected by this, but there have been a lot of other shops across America that have, you know, announced that they are closing, you know, just a period that they're closing. I don't know if it's between all this stuff with Diamond, or just, you know, the lack of money coming in, or a combination of both, you know, rent still needing to be paid. But yeah, just, you know, this thing is putting a lot of businesses out of business.
Yeah. It's weird, man. I mean, like you said earlier, it's an unprecedented time. We've never had anything. I mean, this is kind of the only thing equivalent, and it's not in our lifetime, was World War II. Really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in our lifetime, there's been nothing like this. So it really does seem like it's going to rearrange what we think of as, you know, our world. And we don't even know. We're still so far into the forest that we can't see the trees at all. Like, we just don't know, you know, where we'll be in a month, in 2 months, 6 months, whatever. So it is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. It is going to be really curious to see where we, where everybody as a community, you know, comes out on the other side of this, you know, yeah. What the landscape's going to look like.
Yeah. So, I mean, what better time to read comics, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and if, you know, nothing else, what better time to get caught up on comics?
Yeah.
What better time to, you know, to start reading some new stuff that you haven't read before, because,
right.
You know, your books that you generally read don't have anything new coming out.
Yeah, right. So what are you reading?
Myself, you know, I've been reading primarily the Joe Hill's his Hill House imprint that he's been putting out through DC.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for those of you who don't know, Joe Hill is a very very prolific author. Prolific?
Yeah,
I could say prolific at this point.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
For those people who don't know, Joe Hill, and you know, as great of an author as he is in his own right, you know, he'll, you know, obviously forever be known as Stephen King's son. So you can really get an idea of one, the genre in which he writes, and you know, his pedigree.
Yeah.
But yeah, so right now they have what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 books out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think,
I think some are ending. Well, some were scheduled to end soon. And I think there's others starting.
Yeah.
Up.
Yeah. So there was five mini series. Two of which were actually written by Hill himself, and the other three, you know, essentially he's curating this, you know, this imprint here with, you know, like-minded people. You know, I think Mike Carey, he writes one. And, you know, Mike Carey, you know, he's probably what best known for writing
Lucifer, I think.
Lucifer and Hellblazer.
Yes, and he Unwritten was one, and then also he also writes novels, and he writes them under Mike Carey, but he also writes them under M.R. Carey, and I think probably his most successful thing, which I've not read or seen, but was reminded of today, is The Girl with All the Gifts.
Yes, yes. Yeah, but I know he has some books out. Who else is there? Laura Marks.
Yeah, she's doing the book with Kelly Jones, Daphne Byrne, which I just absolutely fucking love.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I am very, very big into this one as well. So Daphne Byrne, for people, you know, who haven't got a chance to pick it up yet, because I think it only has 3 issues out right now.
I think you are correct. I think it's 3.
Yeah, essentially it's a... I guess you could call it what, Victorian era, but it actually takes place in New York City.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about a, you know, 13-14 year old girl named Daphne, who her father passes away. Her mother has kind of been squandering their family fortune on bogus mediums, because mediums were very, very in fashion at the time.
Yes.
So she's basically being grifted by, by a phony psychic, you know, who says, oh, you can talk to your dead husband and, you know, this and that. You know, all these different charlatans are kind of coming out of the woodwork, you know. And meanwhile, Daphne starts having these dreams about somebody who claims to be her brother and who shows her, you know, the true faces of everybody, in a sense that, you know, everybody is, you know, already dead.
Yeah,
they're just these kind of flesh suits.
It's tapped into this weird, like, I feel like this weird kind of amalgam where the afterlife and what we think of as life are really like the kind of the same thing or two sides of the same coin. Which makes it very fucking creepy. Also the grifting angle to the fortune teller is, I feel like there's also something weird going on with that, because of the end of the third issue, you see that that's not exactly what you thought that it was. There's something else going on. It's kind of cultish. I don't want to say too much, but yeah, it's just creep factor's high. It's really good. I'm unfamiliar. Do you know Laura Marks from anything else?
Laura Marks, you know, she has done a lot of television writing.
Okay.
I know that, let's see, I mean, she's written some stuff for, like, the TV show Ray Donovan, and she's written for The Expanse.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
The Exorcist, it looks like she wrote on that series. It's a good book. I mean, we were just talking about Kelly Jones on our sister podcast, The Horror Vision, just a couple days ago. And, yeah, that I love his art, so it's very cool. And actually, just to bridge the two podcasts for a second, we had a conversation about Kelly Jones, and I could not remember the name of the Batman that he did. And I actually picked it up on Kindle for $1.99 right after we wrapped that episode of the Horror Vision. And it's Red Rain, Batman Dracula, and it's just a one-shot Elseworlds. There may have been a sequel. Okay. It's really cool, though. I started reading it like that night. It's very cool. And his art, while it's not quite as sophisticated at that point as it is now, it's still very good. So,
so yeah. I mean, Daphne Byrne, I give it a thumbs up.
Same here. What else are you reading? So you're reading the Dollhouse one, and I missed that one from the jump, so I missed a couple issues, so I'm probably going to end up reading it in trade. But is that one that Hill's writing?
The doll. Let me see. The Dollhouse Family.
That's it.
No, that is one that is done by Mike Carey.
Oh, okay.
And that actually is being put out as M.R. Carey.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of unique too. So the premise of that one is that there's a girl named Alice, and on her sixth birthday, her dying great aunt sends her a birthday present. And it's this big, giant 19th century dollhouse that has this little family of antique dolls in there. And then she, you know, discovers that these little dolls, that they're actually alive. And there's this whole, like, little kind of world that's going on. I don't want to give too much away with it.
Right, right.
That one actually has ended.
Okay. Oh, good. So I'll be able to pick it up in its entirety at some point soon. Are you reading the the other one I'm reading is the Lolo Woods?
Yes. No, that one is actually written by
Carmen Maria
Machado.
That one I've only read two issues of, and I also want to mention all of these have, but I've been reading them in such a sporadic fashion that I don't have them all, so. There in the back of every issue of all of these, there's a bonus story going on called Sea Dogs. And so it's kind of serialized. So you'd have to read all of the Hill House stuff in order to get all of the chapters. And it'll be collected for sure. I don't know. I haven't really read that because I didn't have them all, but I thought that was a very cool way to kind of tie them together.
I do believe that one is written by Joe Hill.
Is he also writing the Basket Full of Heads?
Yeah, now Basket Full of Heads, that was the first
yes.
released issue, which I think came out on this past Halloween. But yeah, Basket Full of Heads, yeah, that one is that one's a lot of fun. You know, true to Joe Hill fashion, you know, it's a very unique story. But it's back in the 80s. And basically this big storm kind of comes and it washes out the this kind of bridge to this little island where this like kind of little town is. But kind of long story short, this girl, she ends up trying to defend herself from a home invasion and grabs out of this guy's collection of unique swords and other kind of weaponry. She grabs this Viking axe.
Ooh.
And the axe, basically anytime she swings it, she's taking off, you know, people's heads with just one clean swipe. But every time she takes somebody's head off, the head continues to live. And it continues to be aware and talk.
Oh, wow.
So quite literally, as she's going through this little adventure, she's collecting a basket full of these heads. Yeah, so that is very true to the Joe Hill, Stephen King style. Just, you know, what the fuck did I just read?
Yeah, right. Did that one finish?
No, that one definitely did finish. That one did full six issues.
Okay, so there's another one. So it sounds like that first wave.
Yeah, the original announcement was, Basket Full of Heads, Dollhouse Family, The Lolo Woods, Daphne Byrne, and The Plunge.
It was being called a pop-up label, which I thought was interesting. So I'm assuming that means that they'll probably finish these and then... And they're staggered in release schedule. And so I'm going to assume it's going to be like a full year. If it was October, then it sounds like it was originally scheduled to go to October, the way they've staggered them and the issue numbers. So it'll be interesting to see, because of the interruption, how that plays in and like what maybe ultimately will be the fate of this quote-unquote pop-up label. But, I mean, Joe Hill, like, he's obviously got major mojo comic book wise because of Lock and Key, which, you know, was turned into a Netflix show that I believe did fairly well.
Yes, that actually just got, they announced that it did get
second season, right?
Yes, yeah, it got renewed for a second season. So yeah, between that, he also has the Nosferatu, the other TV show based on one of his books on AMC, is it?
Yeah, which I love the book. I read it. I actually got to read that one before it came out because I had an advance. But I've struggled with the show. I don't think it's bad. I don't know. I go up and down with it. I made about halfway through, and I keep meaning to go back to it, and I haven't. Did you watch that one?
Sadly, I didn't. I think I watched the first and second episode, maybe. And I don't know if it just... I couldn't really relate to the lead actress, or... you know, or just life happened and I had other things
that were
going on.
I mean, that was definitely part of it for me, but also, like, even, you know, life happens, but if something really gets you, you find a way, right? And I feel like that one didn't get me, and I keep trying to dig in my heels. I think my major concern with it, it's nothing against the actress, but the character in the book is younger, and the actress looks like she's the same age as the actress playing her mom. So when it's like the family together, I'm like, it looks like a bunch of peers. It doesn't look like a family. It's just, I don't know. It's like, I don't know why that it affects it so much for me, but it just was one of the things that I couldn't kind of get past. But I do mean, I want to go back. I've heard that there's a small cameo by Pennywise in a very like kind of, like obscure way, you know, so there's not like a copyright infringement, but I don't know. Nosferatu, the book, was the first time Joe Hill and Stephen King's stuff kind of nodded towards one another. It was that nods towards Pennywise, and then around the same time that came out as a book, Stephen King put out Dr. Sleep, and that book nodded towards Charlie Manx, who's the villain in Nosferatu. So that was the first time where you kind of got any crossover, or at least that I knew of.
Yeah.
Which was pretty cool. So, I don't know. I'm going to try to go back to it, but, you know, like you said, life happens. But although now, I guess most of what happens is in your own home. So, it, you know.
Yeah, very true. Yeah, so, you know, unfortunately, yeah, it looks like all the stuff that I've been reading doesn't really have any kind of conclusion. So as far as like recommendations go, I can tell you how much I enjoyed the first half of the series. Right.
Oh man.
I mean, so far, you know, each of the five, you know, well, technically six Hill House books that I've read, I have enjoyed in one way or another. Some are definitely going to be stronger than others. You know,
yeah.
In some cases, you are comparing apples to oranges.
Yeah, definitely.
But I really hope that this, just like you said, the pop-up imprint, I really hope that it continues on. Because, yeah, a lot of these really do have that strong, older Vertigo mixed with, you know, classic EC comics kind of vibe to them, and I really enjoy that.
Yeah, same.
So I'm really hoping that they continue their relationship with one another, Hill and DC, and continue to put these out.
Agreed.
Yeah, now I know that we touched on it again last week on our sister podcast of The Horror Vision. That you had recently checked out an older book, I believe, or at least within a year or two, of the Prometheus. Fire and Stone?
Fire and Stone, yeah. It was another one of those Kindle, it was like a flash sale, I guess. So Prometheus Fire and Stone was the name of an event that ran through several miniseries that Dark Horse did with those, you know, 20th Century Fox properties that are related. So it was like a 4-issue Alien series, a 4-issue Predator series, a 4-issue Prometheus series, a 4-issue AVP series. And there might have been a bookend, I think, as well. But it was pretty cool. Tied directly into the Prometheus film, and in a way, without using the characters or whatever. One of the things, I really dig both Prometheus and Alien Covenant, although Alien Covenant was a letdown because I wanted Prometheus 2 and I got another Alien movie, which is fine. But also, I mean, they kind of took everything they set up with Prometheus and just like dumped it off screen between movies, and we're like, well, here you go. So the engineers to me are the most fucking fascinating thing going in that universe right now. And we just didn't get any in Covenant in the way that I wanted. So this gives you more of the engineers, not a lot of kind of the backstory, but there's one present for most of the event. It was a good read. It was solid.
Yeah. I mean, upon your recommendation of it, I did start to read it myself. So I guess the way that the book is split up, you know, unlike a, you know, traditional crossover where it's, you know, first issue is in Prometheus, second issue is in Aliens, third issue is in Predator kind of thing. You know, it was, you know, all four issues, you know, of one book, and then all four issues of another book, and so on and so forth. So I've only read about a quarter of it myself. So I just kind of blazed through the first four issues of the Prometheus book. But yeah, I enjoyed it. You know, really what intrigued me was when you were talking about the black goo.
Yes.
And what happens when you inject it into a synthetic android like David or like Bishop was, you know, trying to see what happens. You know, and that was really like kind of like what intrigued me to go ahead and try to give it a read. You know, is it the most well-written book? No, but I mean, then again, neither Alien or Prometheus are the best
read. Right,
but you know, it is a fun read for people who are fans of those series, which I consider myself to be. So yeah, so it was a good recommendation, and I'm glad that I started it. And, you know, I'm looking forward to finishing the rest of it.
Stick with it; it goes interesting places, and I feel like it is a better next chapter to the movie Prometheus than Alien Covenant is. And it just, you know, like you said, I mean, they're not the nothing about them is James Joyce, you know, level writing, but they, I don't know, they really. Where I think Ridley Scott is more interested in continuing Alien in a way that I don't necessarily know lines up with what I want. I mean, fuck me, who am I? It's his creation. But just, I don't know, you know, Aliens and Predator have always been problematic as far as the way that the story goes. And and I feel like Prometheus has now joined that. So all of those kind of properties have this, I don't know, just this weird ambiguity to the way that they move forward. And I feel like this series of comics kind of just gave me a little bit more of what I wanted originally from like a second Prometheus movie, except also utilizing all this other stuff. So, you know, the Predator, it's fine that it's there and that they use those or whatever. But really, like you said, the thing that, like the black goo that the engineers use to create life and the way that this figures into the story and then the evolution of the construct, Eldon. And you'll see as you read along, they jump around. So in that Prometheus series you just finished, they're referencing a cave where there was all of this like research, like these equations and stuff scrawled on the wall and different kinds of technology were kind of hidden there. And the aliens wouldn't go near this cave, and they didn't know why. So the survivors from that, you know, from that miniseries end up in this cave. And then I think it's the very next miniseries, which I want to say is the Alien one, that jumps back in time and shows you the story of the people that ended up in that cave and wrote that stuff on the wall and stockpiled technology there. So it's cool. It kind of jumps around and then it swings back forward and ties things together.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, they Tarantino it.
Yeah, but on a bigger scale, because it's not like, you know, it's not scenes. It's these big, the scenes of these big four issue stories. And so it's cool. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of moving parts, but I felt like they did a good job balancing everything. So it was well planned.
Nice.
Let's see. There's two books I picked up recently, number ones, which, I mean, I guess, you know, it remains to be seen when we get number two, but that were really interesting. The first one is an Image book by Jonathan Hickman and I believe it's Mike Huddleston. Let me check that first name. Yeah, Mike Huddleston, Russ Wooten, and Sasha E. Head. And it's called Decorum. Man, this book is fucking weird, dude. You know, Jonathan Hickman is very heady in the way that he writes, and he uses some of his books. I'm very fond of his Black Monday Murders, which had Decorum reminds me a lot of it, the way there's a heavy graphic design element that's a key to the story and the way the book's laid out. It's huge. Mm-hmm. For $4.99, this issue is gigantic. And some of it is just like info pages where they summarize things like aspects of world building, but then also it's not just like text. It'll be graphs and pie charts and stuff that show you different things like the layout of the galaxy and the different, you know, sectors and who is where.
So he's really world building with this.
It's really world building. And you know, sometimes, I mean, parts of it almost read like a role-playing game guide in a way. It depends on how people do that. Like, world building when it's really ostentatious can be annoying. Because it's like, well, if you have to explain everything about your world to me, then it kind of gets, you know. But the way he does it is really visually pleasing with all this design. And it's just really interesting. But it is, man, it's a crazy book. It's like, it's hardcore sci-fi, like space fantasy, which is not usually my cup of tea. But because of the way it looked, I was very curious about it. The art almost has a mixed media feel to it, the way the panels are put together, because they'll use different, the layout will be
not very, just a page. Yeah. Not, looks not like very sketchy with digital overlay.
Yes, almost exactly.
Watercolor in some places.
Yes, a lot of overlay, a lot of almost like watercolor or black and white, like accented by certain colors for effect. And I mean, there's like a whole kind of like the story involves a girl who's a courier who's hired to deliver something and ends up kind of in this like standoff with an assassin and some people from a crime syndicate kind of thing. But there's a whole preamble that is like some kind of tribal versus technological warfare, and I'm not sure how that ties in exactly. And then just a lot of the supplemental stuff is just really fascinating. So it was interesting. I'll definitely pick up another issue at least just to, you know, see if it continues to grab me.
And then he said there was a second book that you'd been checking out.
Yeah, so this one is another, I don't know anything about this creator, but when I heard about this, it seemed like they must be fairly well known. It's Mirka Andolfo's Mercy. And this is another Image book. First issue just came out within the last month. And it's interesting. The art is it looks like stills from a cartoon almost, the way the art is. And for me, that can go either way. It can turn me off or I'll like it. East of West, another Hickman book, is very much like that. And I really liked it, even though I haven't kept up with that book. I need to. But this I also really like. And it has a Victorian element and also kind of a quasi, maybe Lovecraftian element. There's kind of these tentacle things. I don't even know how to summarize this yet. It's like there's some kind of a monster that seems to be using people as hosts, and it looks like a cross between flowers and tentacles, and I don't know. It's really, there's a widow who clearly knows more than she's letting on, and there's an orphan child and a whorehouse and kind of all Victorian elements, I guess. But it remains to be seen where it goes. But I dug the first issue, even though I guess the reason I dug it is because I was like, wow, I don't really know what the fuck I just read. So I need to come back for more to kind of get a better sense of what the story is going to be.
Yeah, that's very interesting, because was this Mirka Andolfo?
Yeah.
Okay, so it looks like she's worked on Hex Wives, and she's worked on DC Bombshells.
Yeah, it's cool, though. It's definitely interesting. It's got me intrigued to see where it's going. So, real quick, one more that I just picked up today, actually. It's an Action Lab. And the bug, I guess, had the creator they're signing recently, because I got a signed copy. It's called Sweetheart by Dylan Gilbertson. Art by Francesco Iquinta. Really interesting book. Another kind of horror book, and it's like a world where there's monsters, and they mark people. And once they mark you have to drink this tonic like every couple hours for the rest of your life in order to keep them away. Otherwise, they presumably kill you.
Well, that's horrifying.
It's really interesting. I feel like there were...
It sounds very daunting.
Very. I don't know that the daunting came out, but I think the first issue, it was a little streamlined because I think it was introducing the concept, and then it kind of opened something else up at the end. So I feel like it's going to get more harrowing as we go further with the story. So, and I also, like, it seems like an analogy for disease, you know, where it's like once this touches your life, it's with you forever. Like there's the way it starts, there's a very young child who gets marked, and then his mother's like, he goes to the hospital, and the doctor's explaining, you just take this tonic every 4 hours and it'll keep them at bay and blah, blah, blah. And the mother's like, you know, you can live a normal life even, you know, despite this. And it just felt like a definite, like, metaphor for disease. I've heard people say the same thing about diabetes or, you know, HIV. So it's, I don't know. It's another one. And Action Lab is super independent, so I just wanted to give a quick shout out to it. It's Action Lab's Danger Zone, and it was cool. It's worth picking up. I liked it.
Nice.
So, but yes, while we are all locked down, sheltered in place, we'll start putting these out on a regular basis, and probably reviewing a lot of older shit that we're just getting around. There could be a lot of new stuff.
Yeah, going to be a lot of classic corner going on.
Yeah, right about it. So, yeah, I mean, you have anything else?
No, I think that's kind of all I've been focusing on beyond doing rereads of Sandman.
Oh, nice. How far are you?
I'm in the middle of Season of Mists.
Possibly my favorite.
Next episode, I'll talk a little bit about that and a little bit about upcoming Lock and Key crossover.
Oh, yeah. So next issue, you talk about Sandman reread. I'll talk about it. I just reread X-Men Inferno, start to finish. So we'll talk about those. So a little bit of teaser. So I'm Sean.
I'm Chris.
And we are Drinking with Comics, the conversation, and the conversation will continue.